Welcome to episode 296 of After the Credits. I am your co-host, Brain Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Colleen, my army of spider plants will eventually take over the planet.
And Dale, whose army of spider plants is non-existent, so will be dominated by Colleen's spider plants.
As it should be.
I have a feeling Colleen's spider plants are at the very least going to take over her home.
Well, you know what? I have an army of carnivorous plants that eat insects, so there might be actual sort of like hostilities between the opposing armies, so I might be collateral damage here.
You know, I might need one of those carnivorous plants because I don't know why. I have no idea. I think it might be one of the plants that I have in the house is attracting like bugs, like little, they almost look like little fruit flies.
Fruit flies, fungus gnats.
And they're freaking everywhere. So I think the house might actually do well by having one or two plants that eat those little suckers.
Do you have a lot of light in any of your rooms?
No, I'm in a basement.
Yes, that's kind of why I asked, because all carnivorous plants basically need obsessive amounts of light.
Okay, well, that sucks.
Otherwise, fungus gnats, keep the top layer of your soil dry if you can. And
so how do you water your plants?
Well, just don't leave it like sopping wet kind of thing. Like if you can get the watering, if like there's mulch or something, you take it like away, water it, and then put the mulch over top. The flies need the top layer of the wet soil to do anything.
Okay, this is amazing information, which I am totally going to put to use. And I am sorry to anybody that came looking for a movie podcast, but we got sidetracked right off the
bat. Well, you've been listening to Colleen's Plant Talk.
Nothing wrong with that. Oh, but thank you for the update. I definitely will try that, at least with the plants that are in the bedroom, because yeah, it's turned into, I don't see them, but the other day I looked up and I'm like, I think there's dead bugs inside the light fixture, and I took the glass off and I could have died. Ooh. So yeah, now I need to clean that every week, but I need to find some sort of other solution.
All right.
Okay, now that we bored you all to tears with plant talk, let's talk about something that we actually came together to talk about, which is movies and television, entertainment in general. It's happening. Yeah. Where do you guys want to start?
Yeah. I don't know. Where do you want to start?
I don't know.
Should we start with movies?
Okay, let's do movies.
Okay, well, let's start with some movies then.
Yeah, Marina, let's start with some movies.
Dale, you got some movies?
I have three. All right. I have three movies, all of which I saw on Netflix, but they are in fact movies, so I'll count them as movies instead of Netflix. It's all confusing. This synergization, sort of trans, whatever the hell, I'm just confused all the time. Anyways, let's start with the classic. I watched Life of Brian because Life of Brian is the best Monty Python film ever. I know that's not popular because most people will say like the Holy Grail kind of thing. But no, they're wrong. Life of Brian, it's the best. The People's Front of Judea. No, we're the the front of the People's Front of Judea or whatever. It's just great. I love the Life of Brian. I also watched a young adult TV movie called Wild Child. A out of control Beverly Hills 90210 Malibu teenager is causing havoc, so his dad, who is Dennis Quaid, sends her off to a British girls' boarding school where she doesn't get along with anyone at first, but of course she by the end becomes like the best. So it's terrible. Don't watch it. It's just garbage.
You know I'm totally going to watch that.
Oh, it's so bad. Oh, my God. I don't know why I watched it, but I'm like, oh, let's click on that. Well, I'm committed now. within about 2 minutes, I'm like going, I've made a terrible mistake, but I'm not moving. I'm just going to sit here with my beer and watch this terrible, terrible thing. The other one is a Netflix original
Me too. Me too.
Oh God, I watched this too.
Oh, did you?
It's so bad.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm trying to think of
Thunder Force.
A good thing to say about it.
There is nothing. Oh, I actually. there's one good thing about it. Some of the music is really great.
It overall.
Yes, yes. Okay, there you go.
I mean, okay, so.
Oh, damn.
So for people that this has just come out new on Netflix, and it's Octavia Butler and Melissa McCarthy and. Oh, sorry, Octavia Spencer. Thank you.
No, Octavia Spencer.
Anyway, who I both have really liked in the past. And yeah, they are crime fighting superheroes because reasons. And yeah, I mean, there was bad stuff in it, but it also had some really great scenes. It had a lot of heart, and there was just an overall sense of fun that it kind of worked for me overall. So in the end, in spite of all of its flaws, I still enjoyed it.
I, you know, for me, I think that thematically, I like some of the concepts. Like, I love the fact that you have two women over 40 who turn out to be superheroes. I love the fact that it's basically all the women have power in this movie and agency. I just thought some of it was just really stupid in the weirdest way.
That, like, was just weird.
The whole Jason Bateman thing with the crab.
Yeah, weird.
The chicken thing. Like, just exactly. Some of the story plot points are just so terrible. And I mean, overall, I mean, I don't think it's like, I thought it was pretty terrible. I mean, it's not the worst thing I've seen, but I don't know. I just,
you're absolutely right. There was the core of a good story here.
That's it.
Yeah. They really needed, and I think that goes to the writer director. They really needed somebody to like take an edit through there and go, like, you know, or maybe it was they should have had a bigger reshoot budget. You know, like, it might have looked good on paper, but it sure didn't look good on the screen. But you're right, it wasn't the talent's fault.
No, I mean, I think at this point, I saw a headline. I can't take credit for this, but I fully 100% agree with it, is that at this point, yes, Melissa McCarthy needs to find a better director other than her husband. Because, I mean, I'm sure, like, he's been funny in, like, small appearances. And even here, he has an appearance and it's pretty funny. And it's not that he's, like, a really terrible director. It's just,
yeah,
I don't know, like, McCarthy deserves so much better than this.
Yep.
I wish for better. I just did not love it at all.
Those are my three. One, brilliant, and two, garbage.
When was the last time
I'm still going to watch the other garbage movie one?
And could talk about it at the same time. Wow. First run kind of out.
I don't know. It's been a while.
That's usually on me. I don't watch anything.
Oh, I miss the days when we did openings together. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I know, right? It'll happen again.
Tinsel down. Oh,
I hope. It's going to happen, I promise. Maybe not soon, but it'll happen.
I miss Viv being essentially 90% in the same building.
Yeah, well, that will probably never happen, but...
Yeah, I know. God, that was awesome. I'm going to sit down in this chair and I'm never going to leave for the next 7 days.
That's what the movie marathon's for. Come on.
Oh, I can't make it through the movie marathon.
At least half.
I made it over 12 hours last time. I was very proud of myself before. Okay, I'm going to vomit now.
I do.
We're sidetracked already. Dale, you got some movies?
And if we
movies?
Do the movie marathon, I know that Ashley is definitely interested too. Okay, so I didn't watch a lot of movies either. It's just there's been not a lot of new stuff and not a lot of old stuff I'm kind of interested in giving a try to. But my old pick's the wrong word, but I have to mention it. Fitzwillie from 1967. It stars Dick Van Dyke playing Fitzwillie the butler, And Barbara Feldon, who played Agent 99 on Get Smart, if anybody remembers Get Smart. And this movie, I think, would qualify as a late 60s rom-com. it's about an old school butler who's running a theft ring because his dowager employer, who he and the staff love to bits, is totally broke. And they don't want to fess up to her that she's totally broke. So they keep stealing stuff to keep her in money, which she donates away out from under them. The Barbara Feldon character shows up and, well, you know, shit kind of happens. So, I mean, I loved Barbara Feldon in Get Smart. And I have liked a lot of what Dick Van Dyke did, which is why I kind of, when I saw this, it's like, oh, I'll give this a chance. But I really can't recommend it. It's interesting from a sociological movie point of view. It's kind of about this elite class in this New York world that I'm not sure existed back then. It certainly doesn't exist right now. And it totally didn't resonate with me. So,
Oh, that's too bad.
This one might actually sound like a really cool concept. I mean, I could see this really, and some of the jokes in the movie, I could see like just way too far coming, but it may have been fresher when it was released. You know, like that tends to be a lot of these old movies, you know, broke the ground and then it just got redone. So, it's a movie. If it kind of sounds interesting, give it a watch. I mean, and it has, if you're an old movie fan of that era, it's got like a whole bunch of faces you'll recognize in it. It does kind of have its moments, but yeah, overall. And the other movie I saw was The Croods: A New Age, which Marina talked about a couple podcasts ago. Pretty much like Marina said. And the movie, for those that may not be familiar with it, it's kind of an animated Stone Age family who we last saw surviving doom, but now they've become the 21st century Flintstones. So, pretty much just a forgettable popcorn movie. It was kind of fun. It had some batshit crazy moments in it, like a flying hairpiece that took on a life of its own. Like, I kind of felt like I should have had some mushrooms or something. And the Punch Monkeys, I just kind of, they let their freak on with this one. Kind of fun at moments, kind of weird in others. Different from the first Crude movie. It did take me a while to get into it, but once I did, I enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. So yeah, it's kind of stupid.
And that's fun, it for movies.
It Marina. Is fun. I have a few. I want to start with Breaking News in Yuba County, which is Tate Taylor's new movie. He did The Help and Ma. And I think the last one he did was Ava with Jessica Chastain. So this one stars Allison Janney and Matthew Modine as a husband and wife. And Allison Janney is like this super like positive thinking woman who is like self-affirmating and she, you know, thinks the best of the world and is trying, like, I don't know if this is just a front or her trying, like if this is actually her, it's not really clear. And basically shit happens and she finds herself in the middle of this mystery where her husband turns up to be dead and then all this other shit goes sideways. Her sister is played by Mila Kunis, who is this up-and-coming journalist who basically tries to spin the story so she's at the middle of it. The whole thing is just like this bizarre and really funny in a weird way thriller. And it's more funny than more comedy than thriller. I don't know. It doesn't sound like it should work. And it kind of doesn't, but it also kind of does. It's just batshit crazy. And Allison Janney is really funny in it. And so is Awkwafina, who makes probably the best appearance in a movie that I've seen her in a little while. She's just, she shows up and just kind of takes over. And you're like, what the fuck is happening? But it's just kind of weird. And like I say, it's not great, but it is kind of funny. So I don't know how I fall on that one. I'm very mixed on it. I don't know if I would recommend it to everybody, but if you're willing to kind of go with it and just take in the performances and just the batshit craziness of it, it's totally worth a watch because it is kind of insane. Saint Maud, which is insane in other ways. This is like probably one of the craziest horror movies I've seen in a long time. Written and directed by Rose Glass, who's made a number of short films. And this is, I think, her feature film debut. It stars Morfydd Clark as Maud, who is a nurse with a questionable background. And she is not working at a hospital anymore. She now works as like one of these nurses that goes into homes often for people that are dying. And she is determined that she's going to save the soul of her newest patient, played by Jennifer Ehle, or Ely, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name. But this movie gets so crazy in like the best way possible. It is like religious horror at its best. The performances are just outstanding. It's so good and it really gets under your skin. Super creepy. I highly, highly, highly recommend it if you're into like a good sort of creepy boil under your skin horror movie. It's great. Tina, which is the HBO Max documentary on Tina Turner. I'm kind of mixed on this one. I think it's great mostly because they managed to talk to Tina Turner, who hasn't been in the limelight in probably like, I don't know, 20 years. I haven't done the actual math, but that's kind of what it feels like. And she's pretty candid in the conversation. I think what I liked the most about the documentary is how it approaches and how it gives voice to Tina Turner's distaste for talking about her ex-husband and the fact that the media was always looking for the angle to talk about Ike, even after everything had come out about what he did to her when they were together. And the fact that she had to keep reliving that trauma, like 20 years after she had left him and made a career on her own, is just like, the documentary is probably a better like judge of how culture deals with women in the entertainment business than it is really about Tina Turner, but it's pretty solid and I would recommend it. I didn't love it in that it's not like a full encompassing look at Tina Turner's life and career. It's more about her personal life. And I did appreciate what comes out of those conversations, but it's not the movie that I thought it was. So it's great, just not the music documentary that you might be expecting. So that's streaming on HBO Max and Crave. a Doug Liman double shot. This was not intended. I didn't realize that he directed both movies until I went looking afterwards. And I was like, well, that's weird. Because they are like two of the weirdest things to put together ever. So the first is Chaos Walking, which stars Daisy Ridley and Tom Holland. And it's based, well, and it also stars David Oyelowo and the Mads, Mr. Mikkelsen himself, and Nick Jonas, of all people. Go figure. But it's adapted by Patrick Ness, I think is his last name, based on his series of novels. And the conceit here is that it's like a distant future, I guess. There's this colony on this planet that looks like Earth. And we find out through machinations that when the ships enter the atmosphere, it's done something to the chemistry of the men and the women, and the men's inner thoughts are now like basically outside of their mind and people can actually hear what they're thinking. But the women don't have that. So nothing has happened to the women. So there's all these men walking around with all their inner thoughts floating around for anybody to hear. It's an is super interesting concept and I like maybe like the idea that it gets at, but I think it probably reads better than it plays because it does not play very well. It's just, it's okay. I was hoping for more because it kind of has the setup of something really, really interesting, but it just never quite gets there. And Daisy Ridley and Tom Holland are really flat. Which is weird because they're both super talented. And Ridley in particular I didn't think she was much of an actress, but she has shown some range. But here she's like back where she was with the first Star Wars movie. And it's just kind of like, she's kind of like blank. I can't really put my finger on it. The whole thing just doesn't really work at all, which is too bad. And then the other Doug Liman movie that we watched is Locked Down, which is on HBO. And I think it was shot in quarantine or just after quarantine. I don't know the exact details. But basically, Anne Hathaway and Chiwetel Ejiofor are a couple. It's the middle of quarantine in London. And it stars as like this drama about this couple that's having issues and they're locked together in a house because of reasons, COVID. And then it turns into a heist movie, oddly enough. It's really weird. Yeah, I don't know. It kind of works as well, and it kind of doesn't. So I don't know. Take it for what it is. The performances are really good. The movie's just kind of, when it turns into this heist thing, it just gets weird. But I don't know. It's okay, I guess. My Octopus Teacher, I watched this under duress, because everybody says it's the Oscar frontrunner for documentaries. And since I've seen the rest of the documentaries, with the exception of one, which I'm still tracking down, I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch this one. It's on Netflix. It's the least I can do. I didn't like it. I felt very manipulated by it. It's about his name is Craig Foster. He's a nature director. He does a lot of like nature documentaries for, I guess, National Geographic and stuff. And he's very good at what he does, but he was kind of like burnt out. So he went home to South Africa and started, you know, communing with nature as a way to kind of like reinvigorate himself. And he develops a relationship with an octopus that lives basically like in this underwater, this area just near his home. And the whole thing is just like, it's beautifully shot. But yeah, they've done the Disney thing with like the anthropomorphize. Okay, I don't know how to pronounce that word, but they basically give human characteristics to this animal, and the whole thing is just like you can feel the manipulation. You can feel it, and you can see it. That
only
works
with dogs. You can only anthropomorphize dogs.
I don't know, man. You should watch this documentary, Colleen. You would be surprised. So I don't know. It's really well made. I have my reservations about it, but yeah, I didn't really care for it, but it is what it is. It does look really good. Raya and the Last Dragon, or maybe it's Raya and the Last Dragon. I probably should have looked at the trailer to see how they pronounce it, because now I don't remember. So this is the new Disney Plus. Mind you, it's a extra cost. You have to buy it. It's not streaming for free, but it's the latest Disney.
Technically, she's princess? A princess. I think technically that's is dying. A princess. I hope that's dying, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, either way, I really like this movie a lot. I like the story. It's unique. It looks amazing. It's really funny. It's like an amazing cast of characters. The voice talent is stupendous. And it just has like this, I don't know, there's just like a bit of a joy to it. It's really, really charming and really nice. And the baddies are actually kind of creepy. And it has this very post-apocalyptic feeling to it, which I wasn't expecting. So thumbs up from me, even though you can't see it. I say see it. This is great. Good on Kelly Marie Tran for taking this on, because the movie is fantastic. And Aquafina is like, really funny as the dragon.
Talked about this last podcast. Like, I really enjoyed it too. Gemma Chan is in there without a British accent, which totally confused me. What I found actually talking to some other people that have seen it, Aquafina is totally polarizing. you either like her, or I had a couple friends that were just like, oh, it was great except for Aquafina. It's like, what? I can too.
Yeah, I can
her
see
character
that.
Was a little bit uneven, I thought. But I still enjoyed the movie, like just like you said.
Yeah, it's good fun. And then finally, okay, so it was not my intention to watch two Godzilla movies. But Dan is like, we have to watch King of the Monsters because apparently there's a tie-in to the new Godzilla movie. And I'm like, fuck, okay, fine. We'll watch this shitty Godzilla movie. So we watched the shitty Godzilla movie, which is now streaming on Netflix. Okay. And it is pretty shitty. I would recommend maybe don't see it because it's not great. And I'm talking about Godzilla King of the Monsters. It's just kind of like blah. It's really kind of not great. And there's this whole like underwater thing that just I couldn't like get. I don't know. The whole thing just never really worked for me. But whatever.
Correct. All Godzilla films are a jewel, a present to humanity.
Okay, I urge you to watch this one and tell me that it's a gift to humanity. It's streaming on Netflix. You have no excuses.
I will.
But so there is a very, very slight tie-in from King of the Monsters into Godzilla versus Kong, which is legitimately a joy to watch. A joy that I did not expect. So it's pretty great. And I would say definitely see it. Yeah. I don't know what else to say. It's Godzilla versus King Kong, okay? So that's really all you need to know. There are reasons why the two giants are fighting each other, but I'll leave it at that. It's just fun. And that's it. That's where I'm ending it with a double dose of Godzilla. Cool. I will say this about Godzilla versus Kong. One of the things that always irks me is when visual effects heavy movies have their fight scenes, their big fight scenes in the dark, because you can kind of hide a lot of the stuff. Like you just make it dark and then you can't really see it. So you can kind of flub the edges a little bit. Most of the fight sequences in this movie are in broad daylight. You can't really hide anything. And it looks fucking stupendous. They did such a good job. Thumbs up from me.
Nice.
Marina says it's definitely worth seeing. And Alexander Skarsgård is actually really funny in it in this really weird way. Yeah, it's a win. It's a win. And that's right. That's it.
TV shows?
Let's do it.
All right. I have two. One is on Netflix, and it's, I guess, targeted towards the young adult scene. Again, I don't know why. And it made me angry. And the more I watched it, the angrier I got. It's called Zero Chill. It's about these twins, a boy and a girl, and they're really into skating. The boy is really into hockey, and he's really good. And the girl is really into figure skating, and she's really good. And the boy has an opportunity to go to some hockey league in England, of all places. And so they decide to uproot the entire family and screw over the daughter to move to England. And progressively, every time there was a decision to be made, it fucked over the daughter. Every single time. To support her brother, even though she is an extremely talented figure skater that has like plans on the world champions and shit like that. Nope. Made me very angry. And the other one is called Miss Scarlet and the Duke. I think it's on the CBC. It's sort of like something between like a Sherlock Holmes and a Murdoch mystery. But it is a woman whose father ran a detective agency who died, and they don't really have any money. So she is desperately trying to keep the detective agency open back in like 1880s or something like that. And yeah, people just aren't buying into the whole female detective all that well. So it's pretty good. Like very costumey and, like I say, Sherlock Holmes meets Murdoch mysteries, but a chick. So I liked it.
It's funny because that's actually on my list of things to watch. But when I tried watching it on CBC Gem, at the time, I guess it was showing as you needed like a paid subscription. And I'm like, well, eventually it'll come on for free. So I'm still waiting to watch it.
It's weird. The sort of like live sort of on-demand TV stuff. Certain shows, CBC also had one called Belgravia,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of like a short-run Downton Abbey kind of feel to it. And you'd get like one, maybe two episodes, and then they'd disappear kind of thing. And you, sort of like other TV shows, they're up there for like a full year before they disappear. It's like, oh, well, I guess 2 weeks and you're done on that show. So. Yeah, if you haven't watched Belgravia within 2 weeks, you don't deserve to ever watch it again because no one will ever pick up Belgravia.
That's also on my list of things to watch.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thanks. Dale, you got some TV?
So Debris mentioned that last time, but there was only one episode. We're up to 5 episodes now, and I am continuing to like it. My only regret is I wish I could binge this because it's got a mystery and I hate waiting week to week.
I will say this. Dan and I are caught up. We started watching it shortly after you mentioned it because it was kind of this show that we had seen the ads for and we're like, oh yeah, we should mark that. And then when you mentioned it, I'm like, okay, we really need to watch that. So we have been watching it. I don't know how I feel about it. On the one hand, I think it's really fascinating and the episodes have been getting better, I think. But I don't know what it says about me that I still don't remember.
Oh man, I don't think I could tell you the names either, Ashley.
Okay, that's fine then. That's fine. Because I am enjoying it overall. Like I like the mystery aspect you're talking about and the kind of sci-fi side to it. And I do like the setup and kind of like the world that they're working in. I just, the characters, and I like the characters. I can't remember their names.
And that's okay. The Equalizer,
works for me.
Which is a remake of a 1985 TV series, which I actually never watched in 1985 or ever, about an intelligence agent who becomes a Robin Hood style force for good. Most noteworthy starring Queen Latifah in the remake, the 2021 remake.
I just said
Queen Latifah taking on multiple bad guys in a fist fight. But other than that, I'm really enjoying the show. Like it's got that old style. We're going to wrap things up in the end and you know, the good guys are going to win. It's just, kind of total fantasy, but the kind of escapism that is definitely working for me in these pandemic times. Invincible, which is a new Amazon Prime series based on a comic book of the same name. The protagonist is the son of a kind of a Superman analog named Omni-Man, and he's just coming into his powers while in high school. Of course he is. And there's a pantheon of other superheroes and superhero teams. And what sets this one apart from kind of standard fare of this type is it is darker and definitely a lot more blood than other comic book movies. Sometimes it kind of feels like The Boys only animated. And I'm liking all the ethical gray area in there, and a couple of the characters I'm really liking too. There's a lot of characters. I'm not sure where they're going with the longer story arc though. They're kind of dropping a bunch of different storylines. So overall, I'm not sure if I'm going to like it kind of in the whole, but for now I'm enjoying it episode to episode.
We watched not even the first full episode. I think we tried to watch the first episode and I couldn't get 10 minutes. Like 10 minutes and I was like, okay, I'm no interest. Turn this off. I don't want to watch anymore. And I haven't watched anymore. And Bill, I saw Bill make a note that he was really digging it. And when I messaged him about it, he's like, the end of the first episode is really great. I'm like, I didn't even get there. Like I couldn't get there. So I don't
almost
know.
Stopped
I don't,
watching
I'm not
it.
Sure. I'm
and
gonna pick
I think
out.
Actually that's totally fine. Maybe wait until we see where they end it, where they're going with it. It It's definitely one of these.
Okay, so you need to report back.
There's lots of individual things to like about it. I'm not sure as an overall story. I'm just waiting to see where they go with it. And my last one is another remake, actually. They have made a remake of the 1972 David Carradine Kung Fu. And you know what?
Oh, I God. Like it.
I was ready to blow off the remake. And then I heard they're actually using actors from the Chinese diaspora. And it's set in contemporary times. And the lead is a woman. And I thought, you know, this is different enough for me to give it a chance. And only one episode in so far, but I enjoyed it. I'm in to see where they go with this. It's it is a basic good versus evil. It's got some mysticism. It's got a quest and a mystery and martial arts, and it's got some really relatable family dynamics. Only I think probably from an Asian perspective, some of the stuff might resonate more than it does with me, but I mean, God, family's family sometimes. So, again, only one episode in, see where it goes, but I liked the pilot. And that's it.
Nice. Okay, so you guys ready? Because I got lots of TV. I'll power through. I won't get into too many details, but I binge-watched season 2 of A Discovery of Witches because I had watched the first episode when it started season 2, and then I got busy with Spark, and then I'm like, forget it. I'm not going to try to stay on top of this. I'll just watch it all after Spark. And so literally 2 days after Spark, one entire day, I watched The Discovery of Witches season 2. So where we left season 1, Matthew and Diana had traveled back in time to 16th century England because Diana needs training from a witch, and there's no witches that can help her with the training that she needs. So she time walks, and it's like the weirdest conceit. So, but the entirety of season 2 is basically Diana and Matthew are in the olden times trying to, you know, figure shit out. And then you have also the characters that are left behind in current times that are, there's a combination of people that are trying to save Diane and Matthew and people that are trying to hunt them down. What I liked the most about season 2 is they're really, I think they finally found the kind of like the groove and the relationships. And now we are getting more of the side characters, which are really interesting in their own right. So I really liked some of the episodes that basically featured almost no Diane and Matthew, even though they are the central attraction for the show. So thumbs up from me. I really, really dug season 2. I thought it started off a little bit slow, but I think by like the middle of episode 2, I was fully invested. And I'm like, yeah, make it happen. I cannot wait to see season 3.
I am so with you. And
I think it's great.
I also binged it. I couldn't help myself. Maybe not in one day, but, and at the end, it was just like, oh, how long do I have to wait for season 3?
Right. I may have to rewatch season 1 because I this is one of those shows that I'm buying on Blu-ray as they come out, and they're not cheap because it's a UK production. So like you can buy the DVD for like $20, but if you want it on Blu-ray, you got to pay like a fucking arm and a leg. But I've learned my lesson. If I don't buy them as they come out, they go out of print and then you can never find them again. So I really, really love this show though. And it is, I fully admit it's one of the reasons why I subscribe to Shudder, though there are other reasons to stay subscribed to Shudder. Just saying. Formula One Drive to Survive, which is on Netflix. So Dan and I binge watched this show together. I think we watched it in like, I think it took us a week, but mostly because we took our time watching it. I am now fully invested F1 fan. Dan and I get up to watch the races. It's insanity. It's basically like wrestling behind the scenes because it's basically all the drama. So it's kind of fun to watch. And so now, of course, when we watch the races, it's like, do you think they're going to talk about that on the show? So only time will tell. But it's, if you're into F1 racing, or if you like racing, or if you just kind of like weird drama, I recommend it. It's totally worth watching. It's pretty fun. I finally caught up and finished Sabrina, Well, I don't think it's called that. The Adventures of Sabrina, whatever it's called. I don't remember what it's called. I had missed the last, I think, three seasons. So I binge watched them over a period of time. I'm not sure how I feel because I kind of liked it. And then the end of the last, I would say maybe three or four episodes of the final season are just like a total mess. And I really didn't like the ending. I don't think they nailed it, which is too bad because overall, I do like the show. And I like the fact that it was kind of dark and funny at the same time.
It was rushed.
Very much felt like it was rushed for sure. Yeah, that ending, I don't know. It really didn't work for me. But I still really kind of liked it too. So I don't know. Mixed feelings on that one. Vanity Fair, which I watched on CBC Gem, which is why I saw all these other CBC things that I'm like, oh, I got to watch all of this stuff that's streaming on CBC. I know that this has been remade a bunch of times. I didn't realize how many times this has been remade. But this particular version is from a few years back. It stars Olivia Cooke as Becky Sharp, and Johnny Flynn. He's probably the other major recognizable face in the show. He plays, oh God, I forgot the character's name, but whatever, besides the point. I thought this was actually a pretty solid adaptation. It takes its time. It's 7 episodes. So it really gets into all the nooks and crannies of the story. And I thought Olivia Cooke is really good as Becky Sharp. This is one of the few adaptations where Sharp doesn't come across, that I've seen at least, the Sharp doesn't come across as like a wilting flower at any point through it. Like she is who she is for the entire thing, even when she's a bitch. So I kind of appreciate that. And it's a really nice looking adaptation as well. So recommend it. If you're in Canada, it's streaming for free on CBC Gem. You just have to watch the commercials. So there's that. The Wilds on Amazon Prime. I was a little reluctant to watch this because the trailer kind of made it look like this was Lord of the Flies, but with girls. There is way more than that going on. The show is really fantastic and really gets at some really fascinating ideas about femininity and female power. And I don't know. I just loved it. I started watching it kind of reluctantly, and before the end of episode one, I was fully invested, and I highly recommend it. And they've left it in a really good place for season two, so I hope they get a season two because I really enjoyed the show way more than I thought I would. And then finally, The Outsider, which I think is streaming on HBO now. It's like over a year old at this point. But this was the one that was executive produced by Jason Bateman, who I think also maybe directed the first one or two episodes. I don't remember now. And he also stars in a very small role. So this is based on a Stephen King novel. And I think the general feeling is that this is probably one of the worst Stephen King adaptations of late. I don't know. Like Stephen King is always kind of a weird thing for me because I don't really like his writing and his storytelling. His mix of like reality with horror and the supernatural for me doesn't always work. Most of the time doesn't work. But I kind of gave this one a go before even knowing that it was based on a Stephen King novel. I just liked the cast. So it stars Ben Mendelsohn and Bill Camp, Jeremy Bob, Patty Considine. So it's like an amazing cast of characters. But Ben Mendelsohn is kind of like the lead. And it's interesting. It starts off really strong. Like the first episode is amazing. And then by episode two, you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then it just gets really weird for like 5 episodes. And then it kind of finds its way in like the last 3 episodes, even though it's still weird, but they've muddled through the supernatural and you're kind of invested at this point. You're either invested or you're not. I think by the time you get to episode 5, if you're not committed, then just stop because it doesn't get any better. But I actually thought it was pretty good. And I think I was mostly sold on it because the production is amazing. Like it feels like a really high level HBO show. It's super eerie and creepy, great cinematography, amazing cast. The story is just kind of like, it's Stephen King. So it's that. You're either with it or you're not. And Ben Mendelsohn is also one of the producers on the show, and he is so good here. God love Ben Mendelsohn. And yeah, I really liked it, but it's definitely not for everybody. And that's it.
I'm here.
Are you guys still with me?
I am.
Okay, I was going to say, are you guys still there, or am I talking to myself now?
Colleen, I can't actually hear Dale, so I'm hesitant to actually say anything because I don't want to talk over him because I can't hear him.
Well, Colleen, why don't you give us, let's move on to books. Why don't you give us some books? Have you been reading any books?
I have 4 books.
Oh, see?
Yeah. Okay. 2 are related. They are, the first one's Field Guide to the Pitcher Plants of the U.S. and Canada. And the second one is A Field Guide to the Carnivorous Plants of U.S. and Canada, which also covers some of the pitcher plants in the other book, but specifically gets into the fly traps and the sundews and things like that. So super good. Yeah. And then I also read Quicksilver by Neil Stephenson. And it's the first book in a series that takes place in the 1600s, I guess, or the early 1700s, and Isaac Newton's in it, and it's super weird, and just could not get into it, so I don't think I'm going to carry on with the season, or the series. And the final one is Odessa Sea by Clive Cussler. So far, I haven't finished it yet. So far, Clive Cussler has not made a cameo in this one, but it is about arms dealers trying to steal like weaponized uranium or something, and they're shipping craters and antics and submersibles being grabbed by claws and being smashed into the ocean floor, and you know, they're normal.
So wait, how far in are you so far that Clive hasn't made an appearance yet?
Oh, I'm about halfway. He doesn't come in all of them. Most of the actual Dirk Pitt novels, because he has like about, I think about 7 different sort of like franchises of stories. But the Dirk Pitt, which was the first ones he became famous for, they almost always have him in it. So usually he's trying like arriving in some fancy old car or something like that, or you know, saving the day in some catamaran in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you know, just randomly shows up. Oh, hi, can I help you? Yeah.
Somebody's got to save the day. Come on.
Well, yeah, yeah. He's made himself a Mary Jane, and part of me admires him for it. Part of me hates him.
So. I have 2 books.
Dale, what do you got?
The first is The Thorn of Denton Hill by Marshall Ryan Maresca. This is another book. It's actually his first book in the Meridane world. And if you can imagine Dick Grayson as the son of a well-meaning street gang boss who has magic and was sent to the circus because shit was going down in the hometown. And then he wound up in Hogwarts. And then he decided to become Zorro because the drug lord killed his parents. That's kind of like what this story was. It has its tropey moments, but it was actually a lot of fun. I almost want to see a movie of this. And my other book is Peace Talks by Jim Butcher. This is the second to the last book in the current Dresden series. For people that aren't familiar with Dresden, it's kind of an urban fantasy with wizards and vampires and fae and a bunch of other supernatural creatures. Dresden's the wizard. At the beginning of the series, he was a private detective. As the series progresses, he becomes kind of a reluctant but major player in the politics of the supernatural world. This is kind of feels like it's a first book of a 2-book set. Fortunately, the second book is also out. I'm not getting the joy out of reading kind of the Dresden novels as much as I used to. It's still interesting, but I keep turning the pages and, you know, not setting it down and waiting a month. So there's still something to it, but I miss the Dresden private detective days in the simpler stories. And that's it for me. The Dresden of old, indeed.
The Dresden of old. I have read a book. Okay, cheating. I've listened to a book, but it still counts, goddammit. So I think I may have mentioned it last time, but I had just started The Sandman, the Audible version of The Sandman, which was released, I think, last year, which is amazingly produced. Like, it's probably like one of the most produced things I've ever heard in my life. It's like an old timey radio show that's 10 hours long, and it's stupendous. I've tried reading Sandman in the past and I never quite got into it, even though it has like all of the things that I kind of love rolled into one story. Like, it's kind of gothy and kind of heavy metal and kind of badass, but I could never get into the comics. But I really, really, really enjoyed the audiobook, mostly because it's really, really well made. So Neil Gaiman does play the narrator. James McAvoy plays Morpheus. So, you know, I'm invested anyways. But wow, the voice talent is amazing. And I mean, I am biased. I do really like James McAvoy, but he is so good here. It's crazy. I actually did look on my shelf because I thought that at some point I had bought some version of The Sandman, because one of the books, I think it's called 24 Hours, which is kind of like in the middle of the stories, is so violent in the audiobook version. And I'm like, I kind of want to see this drawn. So I literally went on my shelf. I'm like, I think I have a Sandman copy somewhere. And it's not what I thought it was. This is how I know I've got too many books. Because I don't even know what's on my shelf. So I was disappointed. I didn't have a copy of that. But wow, this thing is like kind of all over the map. But it's generally speaking kind of just really dark and violent in places. And I really enjoyed it. It was a really great listen. And I highly recommend it.
Podcasts. Okay, I only have one. I listened to another podcast called Cognitive Dissidence. One of the guys on it is on another one, or two of the guys are on a different one called Citation Needed, where every week one of the, I think there's four guys involved, reads a wiki article and then basically presents it as an authoritative information on the subject. And then the guys just riff on it. And they're assholes. They're four guys are literally assholes. They treat each other poorly at times and they just riff on each other. And they're like about 30 minutes long. And they're just something to kill the dead air in my life. And it works for me. That's it.
I just wanted to say that I have finally got, I had to switch cell phones. So I had some break in my podcast listening while I got stuff switched over. But finally got switched over and kind of caught up. And I'm starting to catch up on Girls on Pop. And I am really enjoying you and Ashley, and regretting actually that some of these conversations can't happen in a bigger forum. You have some interesting ones.
Yes, it's been fascinating discussions for sure. And I always kind of, I never know where it's going to go. And then we start talking and it's like, okay, well, that happened. I'm not quite sure how I feel about this. Do I really want to air out this dirty laundry? Apparently I do. Well, this is the thing. So I was telling Ashley the last time that we talked that I never really know where the conversation is going to go. So we kind of have an idea of what we're going to talk about. But then it just kind of goes from there. And yeah, sometimes it goes a little long. But, you know, we're not going to stop the discussion just because of time. People can listen to it in multiple breaks, I guess. I don't know. And I don't have any new podcasts, just like the regular stuff that I listen to all the time. So at this point, you've all heard it all before. So that's it for now. Oh, though I did get an ad the other day for something that looks really interesting. I think it's called Fault Lines, which is a CBC podcast from a couple of years ago. And it is, it imagines what would happen, basically the fallout of what would happen if the big earthquake hit off the coast of BC. I'm not quite sure if I'm ready to listen to it, though I did subscribe just in case I ever felt like I needed to be terrified. Because I have a feeling that's exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to listen to it and be like, why am I listening to this? I don't need to know how bad shit's going to get.
I just need to listen to things like that so I remember to refresh my bug out bag.
There you go. There you go. You can listen to this one. I can't vouch for it yet. I haven't heard it, but it won a bunch of awards. Though the fact that I hadn't heard about it until now, even though it's like 3 years old, is weird, but whatever. It is what it is. It looks really interesting. So I've downloaded it. Maybe one day I'll listen to it. At this point, I am not mentally ready to make that commitment. And that's all I got. So come on by atcpod.ca. Check out links to all of the stuff that we talked about today. We'll link to basically everything like we usually do. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with more from the vaults of what we've been watching separately, but maybe together as well. I don't know. Until next time.
We'll see you after the credits.